Well, I grew up in an Asian family, and we were told never to borrow. Don't borrow from your neighbors because you don't want to create a fuss. You don't want to be a bother. You don't want to be a burden on them. But the other day, I needed a whippersnipper. And I thought, well, you know, I'm a grown-up now. I live on a... Thank you. on a friendly street. My neighbors are friendly. I will go across the road, knock on my neighbor's house, and I will borrow his whippersnipper. And being a very friendly neighbor, he happily lent me his whippersnipper. So I took the whippersnipper back to my home, and I went to start it, and you know, you pull that zip cord, and the first pull, I broke the zip cord. And I think, oh, this is why you don't borrow from your neighbors. Because now, what do I do? What do I do? Like, do I have to buy him a new whippersnipper? Like, because it was only going to break anyway. It was going to break on him the next time. I was just the unlucky schmuck who was the next one that pulled it. But had he used it next, he would have broke it. Does he have to buy a new whippersnipper? Or do I just roll up the cord and pretend nothing happened? Like, what do I do? So you don't know what to do in these situations. And maybe it's the same with Jesus. We don't know what to do with Jesus. Now, if you've been coming, you know I found this image on the net, and I think if Jesus was around today, this is what he would have looked like. He would have been a short, tanned, nondescript Middle Eastern male speaking Aramaic, Hebrew, wandering around the countryside of Palestine. And we in the West, we don't know what to do with Jesus. But in the rest of the world, Africa, Asia, South America, thousands, millions of people are now deciding they want to know, love, trust, and worship Jesus. So maybe they have seen something in Jesus that we in the West have missed. So maybe we in the West need to forget about the Jesus we grew up with, forget about the Jesus we think we know, and rediscover the Jesus in the Bible. So this month our series has been The Jesus You Never Knew. Our four topics have been, did you know Jesus was accused of partying too hard? Did you know Jesus was friendly with the seedy and corrupt? Did you know Jesus loathed religious haters and fakers? And did you know Jesus was more tolerant than you and I? And each week, one by one, we've gone to the Bible to look at these questions. And today is week four, and our final question is this. Did you know Jesus was more tolerant than you or I? And what we're going to do is we're going to have a 20-minute talk. In the first part of the talk, we'll look at Jesus in the Bible. Middle part of the talk, what problems that I and you have with this Jesus in the Bible. And in the final part of the talk, well, what might Jesus say to our problems? And it'll be a 20-minute talk, and afterwards you can ask me any question that you want, and there'll be a number on the screen that you can text your questions to. So let's begin. Jesus in the Bible. This is a picture of my mum and dad and me as a baby in the 1960s as we moved from Hong Kong to Australia. And back then Australia was different to now because we were only just coming out of the white Australia policy and they were taking non-white immigrants for the very first time. So back then in the 70s and 80s, if you wanted exotic Australian food, you had the prawn cocktail. And if you wanted ethnic food, we had Pizza Hut. But the changes were slow. And so it was very normal as an Asian to always come across slogans like this. Australia, love it or leave it. And welcome to Australia, now speak English. And we cringe because we think, oh, that was Australia from a dim, dark, dark time. It's not like that anymore. We're more open. We're more tolerant. Maybe there's an embarrassing uncle at weddings that still talks like this, but the rest of Australia's not like this. We're now more enlightened. We're more tolerant. We're more inclusive. We're more welcoming. And so when Christians want to say there's only one way to God, and that person is Jesus, well, that sounds just as narrow, intolerant, exclusive, and bigoted. Is that the Jesus in the Bible? Well, let's look at Jesus in the Bible because that is how he seems to come across. This is from John 14. Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And we think, oh, Jesus, that sounds a little bit narrow, intolerant, exclusive, and bigoted. And then we have this saying from Jesus in Luke 13. Someone asked Jesus, Lord, are only a few people going to be saved? And we would expect Jesus to say, no, everyone is going to get in. Everyone is going to get saved no matter what. But this is Jesus' reply. Make every effort to enter through the narrow door, because many will try to enter and will not be able to. You think, what? Jesus, is only one way? This sounds narrow, intolerant, bigoted, and exclusive. What is going on? And to sum it all up, we had the story that we just heard from the Bible, the story of the great banquet, where Jesus says a rich man prepares a banquet. And if you hear in the very first week, you hear banquet. Yes, Jesus loves to eat and drink and have parties and banquets, because that is an image of what life with Jesus is like, both now and in the life to come. Singing and dancing, eating and drinking, fun and laughter. There's a banquet and everyone is invited. But there's a twist in the story. People who are invited start making excuses. Some say, oh, I just bought some property, can't come, please excuse me. Someone says, oh, I just bought some cows, I can't come, please excuse me. Someone else, oh, I just got married, please excuse me. People don't come to the banquet. But there's a final twist in the story, and it's this. There's a second round of invitations, and this time the blind, the lame, the crippled are invited. People you wouldn't normally invite to a banquet are invited. And then there's still room, so go out to the back lanes, the countryside, the rural areas, and get everyone in. What is Jesus trying to say here? Well, this brings us to the middle part of the talk, problems that I and probably you have with what Jesus is saying in the Bible. The first problem is this. Jesus seems to come across as very narrow, intolerant, and bigoted. Now, this is Christian Rutter. His book is called Dadaism, Who We Are. And he's gone through websites like Match.com, OkCupid, and he's analysed the clicking data on these dating sites. So based on the clicking data, he can find out what we're really clicking on in a dating site. Not what we say we're clicking on, but what we're really clicking on. So Christian Rutter in his book says, if you're a woman and if you go to a dating site, who are you clicking on? Well, here's the graph. The woman's age is in the black on the vertical. The man's age is on the horizontal. So by and large, as a woman, you're clicking on a male 3 to 5 years older than you, until the age of 35, and there's parity, and now you're clicking on a man 3 to 5 years younger than you. So that's what you're doing if you're a woman. If you're a man, who are you clicking on? Well, guys, if you're a man, no matter what age you are, no matter how old or young you are, you're clicking on a 20-year-old. And Christian Rutter says, guys, come on. He says, look at all the negative white space here. He says, you are better than that. Come on, don't judge people based on their looks or their youth or their beauty. Guys, you are better than that. But he also found on a dating site, if you're an Asian male, a Caucasian female is 33% less likely to click on you than if you've been white Caucasian. A Hispanic woman will be 44% less likely to click on you than if you had been a Caucasian white male. And an African American woman will be 50% less likely to click on you than if you've been a white Caucasian male. So the worst thing you can be on a dating site is an Asian male. Actually, there's one thing worse. You can be a short Asian male, and that's a double deal breaker. And again, we think, oh, come on, this is so wrong. We should not be judged on the basis of race or ethnicity. This is a famous paper I'm sure you're familiar with. It's called, Are Emily and Greg More Employable Than Lakeisha or Jamal? A Field Experiment on Labour Market Discrimination. And what the authors did was they sent out a set of resumes and job applications, one set with Caucasian white names like Emily and Greg, and another identical set with ethnic sounding names like Lakeisha and Jamal, and based on the data, they found out if you have a white-sounding name, you're twice as likely to get accepted than if you had an ethnic-sounding name with exactly the same resume and job application. And again, I think this is so wrong. We should not be judged on the basis of ethnicity or race, because this is creating an exclusive white male privileged society. But isn't that how Jesus seems to come across when he says there's one way and it has to be me? Isn't that just as narrow, intolerant and bigoted? So that's my first problem with Jesus in the Bible. You do seem very narrow, intolerant, bigoted, Jesus. My second problem is this. Jesus, really, it shouldn't matter what I believe. It shouldn't matter what I believe. So as you know, I used to play rugby for my university, and my future wife, Steph, when we were dating, she used to come and watch my rugby games, but she never understood anything that she was watching. She did not understand rugby. She didn't understand why we had to put tape around our heads. She didn't understand why we had cauliflower ears. She did not understand the game. Then one day, when we're kicking back, relaxing, watching TV, watching sport, we're watching AFL. So I said to Steph, this is AFL. Look, they have their sleeves cut off. Look, if they catch the ball, they get a free kick. And if they kick it between these posts, they get 6 points. And she's listening and suddenly, boom, the lights come on. She says, oh, this is the game you play. And I went, oh, no. But you can understand her confusion, because in Australia, when we say football, it can mean anything. It can mean AFL, or maybe it's rugby league, or maybe it's rugby union, or maybe it's soccer. There's so many forms of football. When I was in high school, you're only allowed to choose one, and we were exclusive about it. So I remember in our school, rugby was compulsory. There was no way you could play any other sport. And if anyone dared want on the field with a soccer ball, they got a detention, and then the coach would confiscate the ball. And he said, get that ball out of here. So we were so narrow, we were so exclusive back then. But now, Australia, we're so much more enlightened. Come on, it's just football. If you want to choose to follow soccer, more power to you. It's your private, personal belief. Who am I to impose my version of football on you? More power to you. And it should be the same with religion, shouldn't it? Come on. It's a personal, private belief. If you want to choose to follow this God, that's fine. Who am I to impose my version of God upon you? It shouldn't matter who you are or what you believe. God should accept us no matter what. So that's my problem with Jesus. Come on. God should accept me no matter what I believe. So let's come to the final part of the talk. How might Jesus respond to these problems that we're talking about? The first thing he might say is this. Jesus is actually way more inclusive and way more tolerant than what you and I could be. See, no matter how inclusive we want to be, we all end up being exclusive and we all discriminate. We can't help it. So when you choose a surgeon to operate on you, we're all exclusive. We all discriminate. Like, can any person with a knife operate on you? Can anybody with any qualification operate on you? No, we discriminate. We choose a surgeon based on experience, based on qualifications, and based on registration. We don't let anyone operate on us. When we choose a barber, can anyone pick up a and attack your head? No, we would prefer a barber with experience. And pricing comes into it. Are you going to pay $20 or $200? We are exclusive. We discriminate. So we all have criteria. We all discriminate. And we're all exclusive, no matter what we say we are. We can't help it. It all comes down to, well, what are our criteria? There's some inappropriate criteria. So if you choose your surgeon or barber based on race or gender, well, that would be wrong. But if you choose your surgeon or barber based on experience, qualifications, and pricing, they are appropriate criteria. That is okay. Now, if I was God, and if I ran the universe, I will let everyone into heaven, no matter what. Everyone will get into heaven if I ran the universe. But you will say to me, whoa, everyone. I said, yep, everyone. I will be the most inclusive, tolerant God ever. And you will say, really, everyone? I go, everyone will get in. And you will say, really? Would you let Pol Pot, would you let the Bali bombers into heaven? I go, oh, okay, you got me on that one. I won't let Pol Pot or the Bali bombers into heaven, but I'll let everyone else into heaven. He said, whoa, can you see what you've done there? You have become quite exclusive. You have drawn a line in the sand between good people and bad people. Now you've introduced fear and insecurity into the equation. I don't know how good I have to be to get into your heaven. So I go, oh, okay, you got me on that one. How about I will let everyone in, not based on whether they're good or bad people, but based on the sincerity of their belief. Doesn't matter which religion they follow, which God they worship, as long as they're sincere in their faith. And then you say, whoa, you've done it again. You've become quite an exclusive God. You've drawn a line in the sand now between sincere people and insincere people. You've introduced fear and insecurity in the equation. I don't know how sincere I have to be to get into your heaven. So I go, okay, you got me on that one. How about we don't make it good or bad, whether you're religious or not religious. How about everyone gets in as long as they're true to themselves. They kept it real. They were authentic. And you say, oh, you have done it again. You've become quite an exclusive God. You've drawn a line in the sand between true to themselves people and people not true to themselves. And now you introduce fear and insecurity in the equation. I don't know how true to myself I have to be to get into your heaven. Wow. So no matter what, if we were God and if we ran this universe, we would become quite exclusive and people find it really hard to get into our heaven. God's criteria is simply this. Did we say yes to the invitation? That's how we get in. And based on that criteria, more people will get in than based on any other criteria that you and I can come up with. So God is way more tolerant, way more inclusive than what you and I could be, and way more people get into his kingdom than what you and I could ever let into our kingdom. And that is actually the scandal, the punchline of the story of the banquet that we just read. It goes like this. The guy throwing the banquet says, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind and the lame. Bring in the marginalized, the poor, the weak, the oppressed. Bring in the people that you would not invite to your banquet. Bring in the people who could not get into your kingdom based on your criteria, where they will get in based on his criteria. They just have to say yes to the invitation from Jesus. Sir, the servant said, what you have ordered has been done. But there is still room. Then the master told his servant, well, go out to the roads, the back lanes, the country lanes, the regional areas, and compel them to come in so that my house will be full. The scandal of the story is this, not that people miss out, but that people get in. More people get in based on God's criteria than based on any other criteria than you and I can come up with. We just have to say yes to Jesus. Jesus is way more tolerant, way more inclusive than what you and I can be. And the second thing Jesus would say would be this. It does matter what we believe. You know what? No matter how much we say it does matter what we believe. Now, I've been married for 20 years, and I can count on one hand how many times I've given my wife flowers, and I've shared this with you before, because as a guy, I don't understand flowers. I do not get flowers. Flowers for me is like, I pull out $20 and show my wife, here is $20, I love you, now just flush it down the toilet and watch it disappear. Because that's what it feels like. Here's $20 worth of flowers, I love you, now let's just watch them die. What is the point of that? But let's say I repent. On the way home, I repent, and I say, you know what, I will be a good husband to my wife, Steph. I go past a florist, and I will buy my wife flowers. And the lady in the florist will say, wow, well, what flower do you want to buy your wife? Do you want to buy roses or tulips? And I'll go, roses, tulips, they're all the same. Okay, she'll say, well, do you want red ones or yellow ones? Oh, red, yellow, they're all the same. Do you want one flower or do you want 10 flowers? Oh, one flower, 10 flowers, they're all the same. Well, what flower is she going to give me? She actually cannot give me a flower because I have not described an actual flower. I've described the notion of flowerness, but there's no actual flower that I've described to her. It's the same with God. We might try to say one God, many gods, it's all the same. reincarnation, resurrection, it's all the same. Jesus, Buddha, you know, it's all the same. Well, all we're doing is describing the vague notion of godness, but there's no actual God we're talking about. But if God is real, if God is loving, if God is personal, then we have to describe an actual God if we're going to get to know him. See, it does matter what we believe. So this is my wife, Stephanie. It's a picture of her with our youngest son. And if I said to you, that's my wife, her name is Stephanie. She was born in Sydney. She went to the University of Sydney. And she enjoys singing. You would say, you know your wife. But if I try to say, this is my wife, her name is Vladimir. She was born in Helsinki. She went to the University of Finland and she likes to juggle fish. You say, I don't think you know your wife. Because if you know someone, the facts matter. You got to get the facts right if you're to know someone. And if God is real, if God is loving, if God is personal, the facts do matter. And the facts matter so much to God that he sent his son Jesus 2,000 years ago to show us what those facts are so that we can come to God. And the facts matter so much to God that Jesus dies on a cross because there is no other way to this God. If there was any other way, Jesus dying on a cross for us would be a weird, inappropriate, unnecessary act. But we say Jesus loves us so much he dies for us on the cross. Why? Because it's the only way to God. The facts matter. Now, Australians, look at that. That is an Aussie. So this is the most normal culture, most normal country in the world. Every other country is either too far that way or too far that way. We are the most normal, natural culture country in the world. But if you come from another culture, there are many things you will not understand about Australian culture. So if you're an Asian, you say, how can Australians walk around barefoot all the time? That freaks you out. If you're a German, you think, how do Australians have a kangaroo on their national passport? That freaks them out. Americans, how is it Christmas and summertime at the same time? That freaks them out. And then you have to explain to them, well, because there's a northern hemisphere and there's a southern hemisphere. So every culture will find its thing that it can't understand about Australia. And every culture, every age will have its thing that they can't understand about Jesus. You know, in the early centuries, some cultures freaked out over the fact that Jesus was a human as well as God. They had no trouble believing he was God. They just freaked out that he was a human. You mean Jesus got hungry? You mean he got tired? You mean he had to eat food? That's what a human does. But he's God. How can he do that at the same time? Jesus got tired? That freaked them out, that the Son of God got tired and needed to sleep. In the 1800s, you know what freaked them out about Jesus? Not that Jesus was a human, but that he was God. Jesus was God? He rose from the dead? That freaked them out. But you know, in the 21st century, we have no problem with Jesus being human or God. If that's what you're going to believe, more power to you. In the 21st century, our cultural hang-up is this, that Jesus is the only way to God. That's our cultural hang-up. So imagine missing out on knowing God. Imagine missing out on being loved by this God. Imagine missing out on being saved by this God. Imagine missing out on the banquet with Jesus because of a cultural hang-up that we will not have in 10 or 20 years' time. Jesus of the Bible, the Jesus we never knew, yes, there's only one way to this God because he is real, he is loving, he is personal. And Jesus is the only way to this God. But because Jesus is the only way to this God, more people will get in than if we based it on any other criteria.